because I don't know how to play, and I don't want to anyway. Need to delete this game and go back to another save. But my hard drive sparked zero charisma, zero luck. I don't have any skills or the XP to fix my.
Hello and welcome to the National Institute for Gamer Review. I am DK.
I am Lewis, and like a Hind helicopter landing on an oil tanker, this is happening.
Did they land a helicopter on the tanker? I didn't see that part.
That's what the Yemenis did. So
the Yemen, not the Iranians, the Yemenis did that? That's
the Yemenis
amazing.
Did that. And I think the Iranians, I don't know how the Iranians took their one just now, but I imagine it was similar.
I would assume you just show up alongside. I mean, what I assumed happened was they showed up alongside it with gunboats and just said, okay, this is ours now.
You didn't see the video
school.
Where the government of Yemen sent a Hind helicopter full of troops? No, but
no, still frames, but I still haven't seen the paraglider attack from Gaza. So if you could send me links to that video, I would be much appreciated, because I still haven't, that happened. Yeah. Anyway, I still haven't seen that.
Okay. Anyway, yes, it happened on the Vision Quest. But, the Yemenis, when they first started this whole thing, I believe it was, might not have been Hind, maybe for effect, but it might have been an MI-8. They took a helicopter, draped with two massive flags, one Yemeni government, Houthi government flag, and one Palestinian flag, and, landed on the tanker. Or not, that might have been a cargo ship, because it's a little easier to land on those with the big flat, all those big flat, you know, parts of them.
Sure.
Speaking of landing helicopters on things, we are going to do geopolitics. This will not be, as some commenters have said, a cringe video games episode, which is great to hear for a video game show.
Do we get? That's funny.
One was like, "Is it really a video game show? God damn it!" we know. But I did say some things about Far Cry, and that shit took a turn. Holy moly! So I said like it wasn't super hyper libtarded, and it's still not, but it. So there are three provinces in the game that you like. Secure in a certain order, right? It doesn't matter, but it's like player decided, it's open world, and each province has a faction that you kind of get on side. And I took them in order of ascending libtardedness, I guess. And the first one I went to was like, oh, it's like the farmers in the kind of plains region, and they're fighting against the government. It's like led by an old farming family that was like seems like semi-aristocratic or aristocratic, and it's kind of very reactionary, very trad, like guerrilla stuff, if you will, like very traditional how you would imagine that kind of thing goes. Like origin of the term guerrilla, like in Spain, guerrilla, like from the first war against France. Yes. Very guerrilla, yes. The second one was also like it was like. Before I made the comments, I played this, and it was like, it's like the old communists who are all ancient from the revolution in the 60s, and the like young kind of college student typey anarchists, maybe a little more Antifa vibes, but not really that hard. And they're like, have issues with each other, you know, and they don't get along. And it was still like very acceptable. There was like a gay person in their faction, whatever, because it's Antifa or whatever, but who really cares? And then I went to the third area, which was brutal. It was like your faction, like Libertad, which are like the one that you're in, and you're kind of unifying these factions by working alongside them. And it's led by a rap group, which is a black woman and a twinkie-looking Hispanic male, who are like very affectionate and weird, and also both like horrendous cowards. And it comes out that the Twinkie male guy is a female to male transgender, who, while a female to male transgender hip hop artist gorilla, got his transition surgery in like without anesthetic in like the gorilla hospital, and this is presented as a very tough thing that he had his tits cut off with no anesthesia, which also like not a thing that happens. Like, I don't know if you can do voluntary surgeries without being under anesthesia, but it's really, the whole thing gets very gay. They shoot a government official for misgendering them, but it also, the problem is it's so fucking over the top and retarded that like I'm still okay with the game. Like, it's fine. And then the other thing is the gorilla is like always talking about leaving. Like, his arc is he's a coward who wants to flee Cuba to America and leave the revolution because the society of the island is still like transphobic.
Wow.
Yeah, no, it's like retarded.
That's his,
like,
that's, that reminds me of like in the Dragon Age Inquisition, where there was like, I guess it was one of the, not your party, your, the Iron Bull ran, the one of your party members had a mercenary company, and they had like a whole thing about how like you are a, I forget, I think you are a man, even though you, I mean, it was just like just the most ham-fisted, I don't know if it's a self-insert or what kind of insertion. Oh God, I'm talking about
insertion. Oh God, the insertions.
Got to keep the, got to keep the wound. What do they call it? What, dilated. Open? Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Dilated. Got to, got to keep the. I think that's enough of that. But wow, yeah, that's well, I think that's all. But the reason I bring that up is because I think that's also kind of an artifact of a particular time, sort of almost immediately post Gamergate, where like I don't, I guess I don't play recent releases so much anyway, but I was aware of this, these stories and those kinds of stories and care, you know, this kind of trans inclusivity type stuff from the gaming press. I haven't seen much about that recently. I wonder if they still do it in that kind of a way. I'm not sure. I don't know.
Yeah. I could go into more of the game, how like, how lazy, like the, it's even like, I don't know if it's like somebody was taking the piss, but like, or like our guys somewhere at Ubisoft was like, every mission you go on, they don't, it's you do all of the work, and then these two like weirdos like take credit for it. Like, the guy becomes like a badass when the girl gets like wounded in the course of gorilla things, and like his badassery amounts to sending you on a mission to capture a guy, and then you capture a guy and are interior, like, you do all this yourself as the player. You capture a guy, and while the guy you captured is being interrogated by you, he comes up and just shoots the guy in the head. Like, no, you were no help throughout the entire process of like this whole thing. Like, and I don't know. I it's a fine game. It also still has one thing I didn't mention is that like Ubisoft just doesn't care about Nazi shit. Like, in terms of guns, like this island, towards the end, I was playing with like archaic guns to make it harder for myself, and I had an MP40, a Luger, and a FN and Fall, and I was very much doing the LARP bit. But yeah, enough about video games. I guess they're fine. Although, also speaking of addressing comments, I did want to drive some engagement early. In terms of comments,
okay,
I will purchase a microphone that's new, that like sounds better. Just give me your recommendations. It has to be something that I can just plug into USB. I'm not doing anything crazy. Just like,
I think the Blue Yeti is the standard for like just a regular USB. But yeah,
I want to see the audience's commentaries. What's the current hype thing?
That's like that's an old meme, but it checks out the racist with the Yeti, right?
Yeah. Well, the Audiospergs are do listen to this, because somebody caught that. Like, I have terrible audio, I'm aware of this, and someone caught that you changed your like,
well, yeah, and but part of the reason why, while we're doing the audio spurgery bit, Telegram doesn't record direct from the metal. It records what Telegram, like when we, because we're recording this over Telegram, and so I mean, you know, I'm
we're still working. Better than me. You would sound better than me.
Well, I'm back to my previous, because I thought it doesn't matter. I'll try a different solution. It didn't end up working. I'm going to try something else in the future also and keep playing around with it. But yeah, definitely it did. This I'm sure sounds better than my previous. We're still met. Yeah. Anyway, Audiospurgs unite and.
Get me a thing that I can plug into a USB.
If there's something better than a Yeti or with a comparable price or something like that. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Whatever's the current thing. I don't mind holding a microphone if it's that, and I don't mind. I would prefer a headset, but I don't care. I have headphones you can put on too. So whatever. Sure. Anyway, enough logistics, right? So how much of the war did you miss?
Of the Gaza war?
Yeah.
Pretty much all the opening phases, all the first month, especially. Yeah.
Really? So. Yeah. Yeah, it was.
I saw saw the memes. Yeah, no. Well, and now it's been a couple months, and maybe I think it's worth taking stock and maybe some retrospective. There's also been some fairly recent developments, and I think it's probably a good opportunity for us because, you know, in big strokes, in terms of the overall like Zionist world government tier machinations, Mike and the guys on TDS have been covering it that way, but as far as the nitty-gritty of it, I think it's sort of beyond the scope of the program, which is good because it gives us an opportunity to discuss some of the that kind of stuff.
All right, so Gaza has multiple entries and exits, kind of gates, if you will, and they're staffed by Israeli armed forces, but the Gazans have over time, basically, like whatever they can see, they can kind of kill. This has been the status quo for a while. Like, so there's kind of a buffer zone where if you're even leaving Gaza, like you don't see an Israeli soldier for like a while. Like you're going through like buildings and presenting papers to video cameras, like. The Jews are very backed off of like with a buffer zone from Gaza, and that's on every entrance and exit. And you know, even there's like the guard towers don't have guards in them; they have machine gun turrets in them that are manned by remote control, inside buildings or offsite even. And the Hamas was able to like just attack them and win. They did like sophisticated attacks with small drones, knocking out these like cameras and these gun turrets, sending in like combat engineer teams, I guess you'd call them, with effectively Bangalore torpedoes or demolition charges to smash open these walls sometimes in parts of gates, because the gate attacking the gate obviously is the most defended part, but also. When you attack where the people are that are they're defending, you can like suppress them there. So they created a ton of breaches on both the gates and the like small outpost bases, and the main wall, just blowing it up and rushing through. At the same time, conducting to cover all this, you know, a massive rocket strike that was also covering. The numbers are fuzzy, but I'm going to say at least 50, maybe more, guys in engine-driven paragliders just going for it. And as like kind of an aerial assault on several locations as well. And then also they went by sea, like on the, you know, from coast to coast. They have alleged they used divers at some points even. They probably just use speedboats, and because the Israeli base that coordinates all of this is like the northern gate, as they quickly advanced just after they blew the breaches, they like charged through like you do in like, you know, standard infantry tactics, like modern small unit stuff. They took that base so quickly. The base that theoretically would coordinate the immediate response was just immediately out the game. And it was kind of like the meme of Hitler sleeping in on D-Day, where like the people there was no one to coordinate these forces to respond. And it took multiple days of like Hamas forces going out and raiding kibbutzes and bases and taking prisoners and in the raves. And there was Jews responding in the area, but they were utterly uncoordinated.
I saw Jews on Twitter complaining. I don't know how true it is. I presume there's at least some truth to it. Of essentially IDF helicopter pilots who wanted to go do something and were told by command to sit tight. Now there's also video of
helicopter pilots at the rave responding and shooting a lot of vehicles under questionable circumstances that may have been full of Jews. Right. So some people
were there's all sorts of reasons why command would, like, you know, they were bitching about it, but it's like, I mean, the Jews on Twitter were bitching that order had been given, but like, it doesn't take much thinking to understand why that was actually probably the right call.
Yeah, but also that's the right call because it's your race of insane sociopaths. it's like calm down, Jews, you know, like, you don't have to that whole phase of like the Jewish response being so slow allowed like multiple waves of reserve, both allowed multiple waves of like Hamas reserves to go forth and that probably weren't even part of the like initial planning, and also get it on the capturing stuff. Like, I mean, they captured and probably destroyed like tanks, like heavy tanks, like Merkavas. They got in and returned to like into their own defenses relatively, you know, intact. I mean, they took probably losses for sure, obviously, but it was extremely effective. It was extremely modern. Like this is a modern uniformed light infantry force
combined arms aerial assault. Like, I mean, that's no joke.
But also, like, just even like the baseline, like they are. These guys are—they're in uniforms. Generally in uniforms. Like, this is a military on a military. This is the whole like Hamas is like playing second fiddle to Hezbollah was because Hamas could send rockets and stuff, but they could never like actually stand and fight with the IDF like an army, like Hamas can, or sorry, like Hezbollah can, and they proved they can. Like they are attacking military targets in a military fashion on the ground. If you're a Maoist, they've entered, I believe, phase 3 of the revolutionary struggle. Phase 1 being like propaganda organization. Phase 2 being like just guerrillas in the mountains doing pinpricks. To phase 3, which is a mixed, both guerrillas in the mountains doing pinpricks and like sending missiles. And also a uniformed force fighting in the field like a regular army while you also fight as a guerrilla army. If you use that kind of Maoist analysis, they're on step 3.
We're gonna have to do an episode on the red book at some point, I think. Sorry, go on.
So this gets them like kind of foot in the door. Israel is given a major bloody nose. Hilariously, because of this intelligence base that I mentioned that got overrun so quickly, it was an intel like pogue base, like in the, you know, it's not full of soldiers. They captured a
person other than Grunt for the pogues in the audience.
It was a pogue-ass pogue base, so it was full of chicks. So they got like a disproportionate amount of
IDF. Like the girls that didn't make the cut for the calendar, or both.
From what I can tell, the hotter girls were at the rave. the uglier girls were in the IDF intelligence torture fucking unit in this base. You get like swept and harassed and fucked with if you're like one of the people who has the necessary permits and money and connections to be allowed to leave Gaza and work somewhere else. These are the ones who just like fuck with them and pull them out of the line occasionally and just torch them for a while. Listen, Israeli intelligence is like retarded and horrendous in a lot of ways. Like it's actually,
well, that was one of the first talking points that I saw in kind of normie world, both Republican and Democrat, but mostly in the conservatard world of essentially asking this question of like, how was there this intelligence failure? Isn't the Mossad the greatest intelligence service on the planet? and prompting a reevaluation of that prior, which is good. I think that's, you know,
yeah. Worth I think part of the big thing is that you do, like, Gaza is a city and it is a community. And like, so there's this thing with political power in America, as white nationalists know, unless you can like walk to somebody's house in a day, you really don't have much connection to them, right? Like, a lot of white nationalists are all over America, but they kind of all live relatively separately. They don't, like, it's hard to hang out, if you will, right? So we communicate a lot online, and because of that nature of that, a lot of our stuff is easy to intercept through all the manner of methods, right? But if all of your communication is literally like a guy talks to a guy who talks to a guy,
you just, like, go and have tea at someone's house.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Like, it's you can't even, like, you can to some degree even insert agents into that or like turn people, but in Gaza it's very hard to insert somebody, obviously, cuz like everyone fucking knows everybody cuz it's a tiny area, and also there's no leverage that they have on you if you live in Gaza, right?
Yeah,
the Jews can't dox you as an anti-Semite,
and because that's what I was going to say is the thing is it's also just a race war, and yes. So I heard a case of like there was a triple agent, because of course there was a triple agent, you know, an Arab who was pretending to work with Mossad or Shin Bet, but was actually a triple agent for Hamas, because of course, like, yeah, because he's a fucking Palestinian, like, you know, and so I mean maybe you might find the very rare occasional collaborator. I think I've seen some, I don't know if they were executed or not, some kind of capture and punishment of Palestinian collaborators, but there was like one video of that with like half a dozen guys at most, and yeah, it's a race war, and there's just no incentive and really very little also, to no there's possibility.
There's profound incentive for someone like, say, in Gaza, where, you know, money's not, it's kind of tight. There's profound incentive to become a double agent and say, talk to your buddy in Hamas. Say, hey, I'm going to tell the Israelis I'm passing information. Give me right. some garbage to pass, and right. they'll give us money.
Exactly.
Say, okay. Like,
right. Yeah, exactly.
Like, how is that not like every like, talk about a startup.
I'm sure that it is. I mean, this is the problem. This is probably at base one of the primary factors leading to this so-called intelligence failure, which I don't know how much. I mean, at a certain level, not to I don't know, maybe it's not worth.
So intelligence failure, I actually totally disagree that, like,
yeah,
you can't stop this, right?
Right.
So like, by the nature of how this works, there is a guy, like, the Gaza is a hostile military base full of enemy soldiers. Right.
Right.
Your little shitty intelligence base is like, what, 3 kilometers, whatever, I don't know how far, I'm sure it was probably like 10 kilometers away or whatever, 5 kilometers away. At some point, they're going to get you. You know, like, they right. can do, like, they can fully mobilize and you not notice. Like, it's a military right. base, right? Like,
Well, they also have the underground tunnel network, and they're not relying on electronic signals so much. So yeah, it's just, I don't know how you stop yeah. it, really.
There were old rumors of them back in the day running like literal World War I trench telephone lines. like copper,
that would be
like
cool,
copper.
But yeah, no, I mean, you know,
underground, you know, like
literally air gapped from the internet in the most yeah. you know, brutal possible way. Like, yeah.
Which is also, I think, what people often speculated, like some of those missions that, like, before the war, I mean, like, occasionally the IDF would send, like, an infiltration team, and they get, like, shot up and fall back, like, some special forces team. People were speculating, like, they were calling these assassination missions, but oftentimes they didn't get their targets, and that actually maybe they were, like, trying to, like, World War I style, like, put a physical phone tap on that line, like,
right,
go in there at night, where you think the line is, dig, and, like, literally tap, like,
see what they can see.
The way, like, like a literal wiretap, if you will. And then since then, you know, eventually, like, the Jews got their shit together and, like, mobilized 17-18% of their entire workforce. But also, the Jewish economy isn't real, so it doesn't really matter that they're not at work. Like, the Israeli economy doesn't produce stuff, you know. It just takes. It's a very consumptive. There's like, they don't export anything, so it's not really an issue. They just buy things that come in, you know, and then like the fucking, even the farms have like hired labor, you know, like the Jews are like, right. You know, they don't do that, you know, even,
farm, but anyway, labor? Oh, God.
Yeah. So they mobilized, they pushed the Gazans back in. And then there was about a month where the Jews didn't even, weren't really able to send the ground force into Gaza proper. Or yeah. I think it was like 20 something days, almost a month, when like they were afraid, because the Jews are terrified of Gaza. In 2014, Hamas just beat them. Like, this happened on a smaller scale. This entire conflict happened once in miniature, where they didn't have to go, they didn't mobilize, like there was not a general mobilization, but the IDF went into Gaza to destroy Hamas and then had to leave. Like, tail between their legs, had to pull out.
Well, and it's worth emphasizing, they have basically no, they have, would you say it's like low, I guess high casualty sensitivity. In other words, any kind of losses on any kind of scale are politically infeasible for the Israeli government. It's people don't, they're just not prepared psychologically. It's probably pretty similar to the American psyche, of this attitude of like, oh, we just take care of everything with, you know, drones and airstrikes, and you know, there's no need for anyone to ever die in armed conflict. Well, that's increasingly not true. Obviously hasn't been true for this conflict. And so they're very, very they don't want to take, it's not just, they're just extremely sensitive to casualties.
Yes. And I think there is some of that, like that is political, like they could just ignore those politically, but also the thing with being like, even if you're casualty insensitive, you don't want to just like take casualties, right? Like they could be being more aggressive on the ground with like just infantry trying to like take, putting like, you know, four guys on a street corner, on every street corner as far as they can get into Gaza City. But those guys are going to take such brutal attrition that it's actually not even worth it if you could pull off those. Like the...
Sure.
Like the guy... So... And even, like... So let's say they did do that in, like, one of these neighborhoods. Well, what if they tunnel in? Like, what if they have a tunnel into like one of those city blocks beyond your cordon, and now there's, you know, guys running around your back line, and like Hamas, say a Hamas, like 30 Hamas guys get behind your back line, they can just overwhelm all these little 4 to 10 man squads you're dotting around in that kind of traditional, like, you know, place to place occupation stuff. So they really are fucked in that respect. They somebody, I think a bit of an armchair warlord, called it like they're fighting Pac-Man war, where if you look at the maps of the conflict and like how they're declaring victory, anywhere a Jewish like vehicle or soldier goes, they declare like secured. So it, but like obviously it's a guerrilla war. The fighters just fall back and come back the next day, right? Like they just take their positions right back, because they can't have, like, Gaza City is dense and it is a city. You like the,
it's basically so like a 2 mile long Counter-Strike map. No, I mean, it's my understanding. I mean,
well, it's a little bit longer than that, but yeah, it's 2 miles wide, I think. But you, like, they just physically can't do it, and they can't do it, and they have these that was like the initial thing. Then the Jews do go in. And Hamas was hyping up that they have these tandem RPG rockets, which, you know, it's a different warhead on what appears to be a just general bog standard Iranian, Russian, Chinese, East German, whoever, you know, RPG launcher base. And they work. They can penetrate a tank at close range, which we knew from Ukraine that, like, at close range, an RPG will kill a tank. Everyone knows this. Like, a anti-tank RPG will work. But traditionally, the kind of RPGs you would see in these conflicts were just, like, the general-purpose ones, or at best, high, what we call high EDP, which is high, like a high explosive one, but it's got a delay. It's like the fuse is delayed, so it hits. So it
can penetrate, and then
you get some penetration, but it's not like a true like.
It's not a true. Yeah, it's not a sabot round.
Not a tandem. Is it? Yeah, a tandem charge where it's a the tandem is a.
Oh no! So sabot, I think sabot goes all the way through, right?
Sabot just means that the projectile is smaller than the tube.
Okay.
It grants it more velocity. It's a thing for tank rounds. It's less, not really a thing for rocket for missiles.
I see.
So the tank guns use sabots that are small. Those are just high velocity. They go through because they're going so fucking fast.
The idea isn't to like, it's not like a heat round. It literally just blows all the way through the whole thing.
Yes, I understand. Tandem operates on two different charges, one basically clearing the way for the next one.
Yeah, sure.
And they also, I don't know how they found this out. Hezbollah has been doing testing in these little, like, in the periodic Hezbollah skirmishes, where they figured out that the Trophy APS system, which is a system that intercepts missiles that are going at a tank, and fires basically like a shotgun effect kind of thing.
Well, it's like it looks like a claymore or something. Like it's like it's like on the outside of the tank in these plates, and then when the radar picks up something that, you know, trips the alarm for incoming rocket, then they blow out with a shotgun. But it'll also jib any dismounted infantry in the vicinity, which is one of the problems they've been having.
Not according to the manufacturer.
Sure.
It turns out the IDF does not believe the manufacturer. The manufacturer is very clear. Like that's why it's so. Their selling point is it's so good because it's more pinpoint and it won't instagib you if you're nearby. Don't know how true that is. I don't think it's true at all.
Well, they don't. They certainly the because, IDF soldiers don't believe don't manifestly do all. Not believe that. Yeah.
But anyway, so these systems were very effective in 2014, and in previous conflicts with Hamas. Where the IDF, they like, if you read the Wikipedia page for the system, it's all about how great they were in the previous couple conflicts, how like armor losses and armor damage was dropped by like orders of magnitude. The interception rates were crazy. Hezbollah figured out, and everyone kind of knew, that you just send two missiles at the same time. Like these systems are good, but if you literally send, and the Russians have actually made a Cornet missile to that does this, where you just fire two, like it can intercept one but not two.
It's like,
I don't know how.
Solution.
Yes,
you just fire two. What do you mean?
I don't know how Hamas or Hezbollah figured this out. But there's also another issue with the trophy system. Which is much more profound, because these things use like radar, and they need to like generate a radar track.
Yeah.
If you fire under 50 meters, they don't work.
That's what I, and so this was we're leading up to. I did see some dramatic footage of because I guess this was happening a little once there were Israeli tanks trying to maneuver within Gaza City proper. You had dudes appearing out of tunnels, like slapping IEDs on the side and then blasting it with an RPG and running back in the tunnel. Which is like fucking crazy. And
as crazy as it is, these guys are just operate. This is what light infantry do in urban warfare to tanks, and have done it since World War II. Like light infantry has been able to just absolutely chew up tanks in urban warfare.
Any good modeled war game for World War II, like tanks are, you know, not going to fight as well in cities as they do. I mean, World War, you know, if you're playing as the Wehrmacht, you're going to want to keep your tanks on the plains and not try to do urban assault.
Yeah, and the Jews seem to be they're aware of this. Like they're not that stupid, right? They're not. They don't think like, oh, we'll send the tanks in the city. But I think there's just not like a better option. And the thing is, as an infantryman, if your choice is to have a tank supporting you in urban warfare or not have a tank supporting you, the answer for you is very like, it's like, obviously I want the tank on my side. Like tanks aren't useless in urban warfare. It's a big platform.
But as a tanker, you're like, ugh.
Yeah. And the promise of this trophy system was that it would solve that. And it turns out like, not even like, no, just not at all. And because of this, there's this thing in the military where, like, if systems don't work or soldiers don't think they work, they stop maintaining them. And you start, or they just don't get equipped. So you're starting to see, like, less and less of these systems equipped than you
did
initially.
That's true. I've seen a lot of COPE cages, you know, the wire mesh to prevent drone attacks. I see basically almost no, like, you know, that kind of scale of claymores or whatever it is.
The big triangles. They kind of, yeah.
Yeah. Or,
So yeah, I think they're just like they're also just pulling stuff out of reserve. So we don't know how widespread this equipment was in their inventory and what percent of tanks got equipped with it. They said a lot, but
I've seen videos that say
the contrary.
Sorry. Yeah. Apparently they're talking about not including it on the next mark of the Abrams, from what I understand. Which, you know, you can understand if it basically doesn't work. It's also really heavy, from what I understand.
It's also very expensive.
Right.
I think there will be, like, it's too elegant a solution not to be implemented.
Incorporated somehow, yeah.
Yeah, but, and also technically it's like, it's not that expensive compared to, you know, like a tank. You know, like, relative to weight and size and cost of a tank, it is still cheaper. I think the big winner here is the Russians and the Ukrainians with the ERA stuff. Just basically the bricks of basically somewhat less powerful C4 that you use as armor. And then while tandem charges are designed to deal with that, they still, like, those things have a great interception rate because there's no, like, technical bullshit going on. It's just another layer of a kind of armor. This actually exact same thing happened constantly in World War II with, like, adding, like, outer plates, like a air gaps plates between like the sides of tanks to deal with, like, bazookas, and then the bazookas getting more tandem type rounds, and, like, this stuff is as old as time, but generally it goes to the infantryman generally wins, because once you're that close, there's a million things you can do that aren't just like an RPG. Like, you can run up and slap shit on it. You can target you can just target the treads of this thing, and you know, like, there's, like, you can't armor, like, the treads are unarmorable, so you can do a lot of good as an infantryman up real close. And I think Hamas is just treat them when you see those numbers like you would treat any modern, like, infantry division, right? So they have some estimates said 30,000 fighters and then 2,000 in kind of a reserve kind of status. So that's three divisions on the field and two infantry divisions in reserve. The Jews sent against them five divisions, a little more than that with support and stuff, and that were modern and had Tally's tanks and equipped them. And when you look at it, like, okay, they got sent, because the Jews sent 50,000 against 50,000, just assuming, I think, the hardware would make a difference. But they were playing on, you know, home turf, and they lost. I don't know if the Jews have the ability to insert 100,000. Like, or if going by the math, like, if there's 50,000 troopers, enemy troopers holding the city, you need to send 150,000 by, like, the kind of conventional wisdom of it, right? And equipment can make up some of that, but not in an urban setting, and not when they're, like, you know.
Well, not when it's a race war against dug-in, like, fanatical defenders. I mean,
so that's one thing I kind of I do want to push back on is the there's a characterization of Hamas as, like, fanatics.
I don't mean fanatics.
I know what you mean. Yeah, I know what you mean. But, like, they're extremely, like, clear-eyed and political about this, and they don't do, like, the suicide bombing thing.
Yeah, I don't mean it's like with this. I just mean they just have extremely hot.
The way I view them is they're professional. Like, they're actually very professional in what they're doing. Like, they're accepting they're going to die. They're obviously, like, religious in their, but, like,
yeah, but I didn't mean, like, yeah, maybe they're all fanatical, like, is maybe not the best word, but I'm not talking about Islam.
They are
Muslim, but they're not. That's not, like, this isn't
They're motivated in the same way. Like, they're motivated in the same way any kind of, like, professional modern force is motivated, And
with the addition that their backs are already up against the wall, you know, like, I mean, they I think there's a very clear understanding that they don't, they have tunnels they can, you know, retreat to, like, in or whatever, but they don't really have operational space to retreat.
Yeah, absolutely. They're under siege, and I don't know how, we don't know how long they have, like, food and material reserves. As an analyst, as I can assess that they seem to have a shitload of those tandem RPGs. When you start to see, like, the older school RPGs come out, or them in, or the they start engaging, they have 50 caliber like sniper rifles. If you start seeing older school RPGs, if you start seeing 50 caliber sniper rifles, if you start seeing, like, traditional Iraq style roadside bomb IEDs, at that point then you can assume,
yeah,
like,
over. Yeah.
Hamas is running out of stuff.
Well, do you think there's any possibility that they're being resupplied? Like, that's the, my next question.
I think it's possible. I don't think it's probable. I don't know. I would say there's a chance that, like, there is a tunnel from Egypt into Gaza somewhere. The Egyptians that would control it are looking the other way. Egypt is a very divided country. There are factions, much like Pakistan. It's very analogous to Pakistan during the war in Afghanistan, where the Pakistani government was an ally of the U.S. in the same way the Egyptian government is an ally of the U.S. But factions in that government are not. And there were factions in the government of Pakistan that were, like,
well, and in both cases, Taliban. You know, talking about, you know, Muslim nations, that the populace is overwhelmingly hostile to the United States. So, yes, the government, the military dictatorship in political control is, quote unquote, allied with Zog, with the United States. But that's just not reflective of, you know, how people feel.
Even just in the government and military and police and Air Force and Navy of Egypt, you're not going to get every single person. It's just it's not possible. You know that like, I just think it's very possible that, like, somebody's getting paid off or has ideological reasons to ignore some tunnel somewhere, some cave.
As
in
I
Sinai.
Recall, when was the last left? Was Hezbollah? Anyway, it doesn't matter. As I recall, there was a tunnel that was being constructed from Lebanon into Gaza or something, and that was found out by the IDF. But maybe there are others that. We just don't know.
I was probably into the West Bank. I would doubt that would be a tunneling effort.
Okay.
Like,
probably you're right. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that makes more sense.
But yeah, for sure. Makes more sense. They you know, absolutely. There actually are. There's definitely routes. There's tunnels definitely from the West, from Lebanon in and out. And, you know, there's just too much. Like, Israel has a lot of border, you know?
Right.
There's a lot of, you know.
Yeah. And the more they create these kind of weird little islands and just the fractal patterns of, it just creates more problems. I guess that's, you know, I'm sure that's part of why they want to just wipe everyone out in their path. And,
So, yes. And then it's, so the response, there's, like, also, like I said, the biggest response, well, I guess Iran and the Iranians are kind of leading the, they're like the senior partner in this thing. And Hezbollah is also like a thing on its own. And Hezbollah's reaction to this has been to essentially ramp up border skirmishes to the point where they can't be ramped up anymore. Like Hezbollah is engaged in a shooting war or a border war over, like, and to where they are in North Israel, to the point where Israeli civilians have been evacuated. A lot of
you're comfortable calling that just a shooting war at this point.
Both sides are bombing each other's bases with, like, missile. Like, Hezbollah has sent, like, actual big.
Okay, I didn't realize it had escalated that.
Yeah, like that serious missiles into and blown up. Now the Israelis had, like, evacuated that base because it was already under fire, you know. But, like, they already can kill a little people with that. But they're sending.
Still,
like,
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, they're using ATGMs as sniper rifles, basically.
Really? Holy shit. That's a Ukraine thing. I've seen that in Ukraine. I didn't realize they were doing that.
Yeah, it was a big Syria thing. ATGMs are great, like sniper rifles. If you can't shoot, you know, 5 kilometers, well, here's a guy who can.
Right.
The Iranians have been – you're familiar with the Malyutka or the Sagar?
No.
It's the, if you ever see a BMP that just has like a missile strap to it, you know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
It's the briefcase launched HEGM made with the Soviet Union in the 60s.
Okay.
And it's been a pain in the Jews' ass ever since the Egyptians got them. That's how they pushed them back in the, you know, in the that's how they retook Sinai was with these things, basically. And okay. The Soviets had this concept where there are these big, like, systems, like, for firing ATGMs that some of our ATGMs are, like, wire-guided at it. Like, you fire them from the tank gun, they're huge. Or it's, like, a tow missile, it's this giant thing. But they're all, like, even the ones that are small, like the Dragon launchers or your Javelins, relatively small. It's, like, still a thing a guy's carrying around. It's a big old fucking tube. The Soviets had this concept where they didn't want it to be, like, a huge, like, deal to carry these things around. So they basically made a briefcase-sized thing where the briefcase is just, like, a computer and a guidance system. And it's a wire, or so it's usually, it was fly wire. They've been updating and upgrading them. I think now they're on, now they fly by light, blinking light adjustments from the shooter. But the advantage of this, the briefcase system, are the person firing it doesn't have to be anywhere near it. Well, anywhere near it is relative. Like you can set up this missile.
Sure, and one, like, have line of sight and then be somewhere else on the other side
and
of the room.
It has line of sight, and then you have line of sight as well, but from somewhere else. Right, so the missile can launch from somewhere that's not you. It's much easier to carry around because it's just a briefcase-sized thing. And they do pretty well. They were actually used in Vietnam initially by the Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese, and took pretty good effect. They were initially all controlled by, like, a human. Like, the missile would actually be, like, guy with a joystick in. There's less of that. There's much less man in the loop now. But you do have to keep eyes on it. Like, you have to target the shooter has to look. But they are real accurate. They have a very low, very high minimum range, which kind of their Achilles heel. Like, if the enemy's too close, they can't be used. But they're really easy to transport. The missiles themselves are very small. They're not much bigger than the briefcase. Like, they could just be carried around. They're easy to make. Everyone makes them. The North Koreans make them. The Iranians make them. Even some Eastern European countries still make them. They are kind of in a weird spot where no one's used them for terrorism yet, but it's probably going to happen at some point in human history. Because being able to shoot a politician from 55 kilometers is like a good tool in the toolbox. And the Iranians have just absolutely dumped these things on Hezbollah. And they're a lot harder to get into Gaza, obviously, because but there's nothing's been able to stop, like, Hezbollah from getting a ton of these. And Hezbollah really likes using them because they can, if you can see a Jew across the border, you can kill the Jew across the border. And they were initially putting up pretty crazy numbers, like multiples per day getting sniped. So it was like a true border conflict. We don't know what numbers of Israeli soldiers have been killed in the border war with Lebanon. It's a little more fuzzy how they're reporting numbers. And we've seen video where we know, and there was at least one American Jew who went off to, like, he was some kind of IDF, had served in the IDF prior and came back to fight, and he got killed in one of those. And no American Jew has died yet in Gaza, I think, which is interesting. But one has on that, like, in the sideshow. So that's what Hezbollah is doing. But there was actually an opinion poll taken in Gaza during that brief ceasefire window over the hostage negotiations over which of, like, you're the allies you guys, like, they respected the most, you know, or, like, you know, which country's response was the most, you know, uplifting or they felt most supported by. And it was overwhelmingly the Houthis. The Houthis have, you know, shut down international shipping basically forever.
As far as I can tell, they really don't have to do too much more to just have one? Like, what are the, like, because the United States, number one, doesn't possess the capability to reopen those lanes, I don't think, as a kind of technical operational matter. But even if it did, shipping companies are not going to take that chance until there's a level of kind of blanket clamp down that's just not possible. And even if it were possible, it's just not going to happen. So
also, yeah. there's nothing in the American arsenal that has not already been fired at Yemen.
They fired 80 Tomahawks in the initial wave. That's an entire year's worth of production.
But like, not just that. The Yemen fought the alliance of the UAE, Saudi Arabia,
right,
all these other countries.
Yeah, they won.
But right. Like the United States fought on the side of the bad guys in that war. Like, the United States supplied.
The United States still call the even though all the government and the representation at the UN and all this kind of shit is controlled by the so-called, like, the reason why people say Houthis is because of, like, Houthi rebels, which I guess I haven't heard Houthi rebel recently, but they still call them Houthis instead of the Yemeni fucking government, which is what they are.
Yeah. Well, also, like I mentioned, we mentioned Yemen. It used to be North and South Yemen, and now it's becoming that again. There's still one city in Yemen that's not controlled by that.
Right. Yes.
But fuck it, like. They control the capital city, they're the government. Who cares? And
at least until it splits again, right? Or whatever.
Officially. Yeah, there probably will be some kind of. There was a theoretical quote unquote power sharing deal, but that's not going to happen. That's kind of off, I think. Although, actually, it might still be on because the other faction probably doesn't like the Jews either. You know, it's one of those things where, like.
Yeah, probably not.
So they've just done it. Like, you can shut down international shipping. Shipping companies, like, they're very risk averse because those fucking big ass boats are hugely expensive feats of, like, engineering and man hours just to create one of the boats. And they're supposed to have a very long, like, service lifespan. And, you know, if they don't get to their full service lifespan, it's a, you know, that's a huge, you know, black mark on the balance sheet for these companies. So, but what I was saying is during the war is the U.S. weapons were given to the alliance that fought against the Houthis. All the U.S. hardware you can imagine: Abrams tanks, your Tomahawks, your JDAMs. The Saudis were getting whatever you can like name, they got it to feed. They got the access to the same, like, the U.S. was doing intelligence analysis and giving them access to spy satellites. The cope was that the U.S. was not ordering strikes, but there were American intel officers in their bases of the alliance, like, picking out strikes to airstrike, artillery strike, and missile strike. And the Houthis just still won. And that's despite also probably the most horrifying, like, humanitarian crisis in the 21st century was the blockade of Yemen, where, like, basically the war fucked up food production, obviously, and then the American backed alliance refused to let food go in, much like Gaza. So that's why these guys don't care. Like, the guys in the Houthis in Yemen. Or just the Yemeni people at this point, like, they took horrendous losses in that war. They watched, like, old people and kids all die in this famine, and they see it happening, like, literally again, where the Saudis blockade the Yemenis. If anyone, like, say Iran, wanted to send food in to them so they wouldn't all starve to death, that aid would be destroyed. And if those people who are trying to send aid sent in their navy or their military to break through for the aid, the U.S. would jump in to defeat them. The Iranians wanted to give food to the Houthis. They had to smuggle it in through a kind of crazy ways along with weapons. The same thing is now happening in Gaza, where the Egyptians and, like, the whole world wants to get food into Gaza. if the Egyptians ship the food in, the trucks will be destroyed. They'll be blown up with airstrikes. And if the Egyptians want to, you know, attack Israel or use their military to escort the food, if the Egyptians fight against the Israelis, the U.S. will jump in and kill them. Same thing with the Lebanese. So the U.S. is like basically essentially enabling like the two greatest mass starvations in the 21st century unopposed. And everyone sees this. And I was listening to a podcast by a journalist he's American born, re-emigrated to Lebanon because he didn't feel, you know, he felt he was more Lebanese. And he's a journalist, he covers this kind of stuff. When October 11th happened, his mother in America asked him to fly home for, you know, while it was like right after it kicked off, because he lives in Beirut. And he comes home to America, and he talked about the insanity like of American media and how the whole thing is covered, and what he knew to be true, and like finding himself questioning like reality, watching American media and how it was being covered, like the fact that the cry, like he's talking about how whenever Palestinians die, it's like an earthquake or a flood, and then when they fight, like, and any kind of action they take to resist is like considered like evil terrorism. So when they're killed by just happenstance in American media. Or, 10,000 Palestinians died, whatever. And he talked about actually he eventually decided to, you know, buy a ticket home, I think after a month or two, goes back to Lebanon in Beirut, and just talks about how like the feeling of like knowing you're not fucking crazy when you're outside of the American like info sphere, like it's designed to make you crazy, and like leaving it when people actually like cover this conflict, it's like going into a different world, like, or like the real world, as he said it. So I do think that like global opinion is, it has to be, it's possibly worse than it's ever been, just looking at like what the U.S. is actually doing. Like basically you're like the bouncer at a bar, and like you're keeping like the EMTs out as you're watching someone like die because they don't have like whatever the right shoes on. It's retarded. Like it's obviously retarded and evil, and I think the whole world sees through it. Outside of like, I know the German media is terrible and the British media, the BBC, has been like during the genocide trial at the ICJ, did not air the South African delegation's like,
wow,
attack, and then aired in its entirety the Israeli defense.
Yeah,
like, but that's that. I don't know. I like to think that's not sustainable as a.
Well, that's interesting. I pay attention to NPR just to sort of, you know, keep tabs on what a certain not the like Jews in charge, but the kind of oven middle class bureaucrat gang functionary. Anyway, they do BBC NewsHour, and at least for the radio BBC, they stop short, of course, of being, you know, explicitly anti-Zionist, but they ask pointed questions of the Jews that they have on, and the framing is, on balance, I would say pro-Palestinian, for at least the radio side of things, and maybe that's the, I know that the editorial line tends in that kind of direction in the BBC, but I guess there are limits, of course.
Yeah, and the BBC is like, you know, it's always kind of been a joke, right? It's just like, it is government news.
I'm not defending the BBC's coverage of the Israeli government.
They did attack during the hospital, when the hospital was taken over. They did, like, there are people there. I think it's one of those ways to say there are individuals for the BBC, and they can't be fired for, like, you can't be fired for, like, asking pointed questions. It's just a bad look, you know?
No, on balance, of course, they're never going to, like, actually be take a hard line against Israel or something. But they're compared to Fox News and the New York Times and just American media across the spectrum, it's definitely it's noticeably more sympathetic to the Palestinians, for sure.
Yep. And but yes, I mean, the American media is uniquely. I'm hearing horror stories from our people in Germany about like the German media. It's just like apoplectic. Like
I have not seen the German press at all. I have no idea how they're talking about it.
Yeah, but it's it is what it is. The stuff with Ukraine has been very interesting. Ukraine is basically like. It seems like they're going to get one last aid package, and then that's it. And they've made it as big as they can make it, or they're making it as big as they make it. But then, like, they're done. To the point of artillery shells, like literally artillery shells, the thing that the Jews do not need. The Jews could get by with JDAMs for a while because they just, like Mike Enoch said, they blew it all like niggers on check on the first of the month, like just bombing Gaza indiscriminately. The Jews could just have not done that. Like, they didn't have to do that. And the idea that, like, we're going to prioritize the Ukrainians who, like, have a desperate and legitimate need for tactical purposes for artillery versus, like, the Jewish need to just launch shells in the general direction of Palestinians is retarded. It's, like, it's the wrong move tactically, right? Obviously, like, Zog gets much more use out of a shell going to Ukraine than it does going to Israel. But, like, Zog's not rational, so you're going to see bad decisions. And I think part of that is just, like, any aid, I think, so obviously without a war in Israel, aid can go to Ukraine, however much they need, how much we can produce. Like, the limit of aid going to Ukraine was literally, like, American industrial capacity for the military-industrial complex. Now, I think you're seeing, like, especially among these retarded Chabad Lubavitch Jews, the tunnel Jews, if you will, that they see any aid going to Ukraine in any form, other than maybe money, as like stuff the Jews are losing, like that should have gone to us, Goy. Like the Republicans have gotten retarded. Like Republicans were always in the past couple months have been like, oh, you know, the Ukraine aid needs to be decreased or whatever. It's too much or it's whatever. But now, like, you're seeing Republicans saying no more aid for Ukraine. Point blank. Period. Go fuck yourself. And I think that's because these Jews see literally anything going into Ukraine that's like a military thing from the U.S. is like being deprived. It's Israel being deprived of that. So obviously I think Ukraine is going to – it's not going to be fast just because of the numbers involved and the scale and the hundreds of thousands of soldiers. But I think the wind has definitely turned and like – You're seeing Ukrainians say we need to be able to build an army of to recruit 500,000 people, or like it's all over, which is not like a thing you say when you're winning by any means. I think peace in Ukraine in some form is increasingly on the table in next year as a result of this, and. I don't think we ever see the big like fall apart of the Ukrainian armed military. At least next year, it's in the next year. Like you don't see the big breakthroughs and huge encirclements and you know hundreds of kilometers taken in like a week. But I think you're going to see the Ukraine thing is going to keep wrapping up, if you will, like the. This is going to it's kind of they're going to keep muddling through. They're going to keep losing small amounts of ground to the point where it just becomes basically untenable that we keep saying, okay, well, they're going to win. Now it's going to come. Well, there's going to be some kind of a peace agreement.
You're right, but I don't. Well, sorry. Go on, and then I'll.
Say but like, whatever that is, and how favorable it is for Zog is still kind of up in the air. But I don't see the Ukrainian army collapsing even at relatively low levels of support.
What do you mean? Well, where do they get their? Well, You mean, if they're not being supplied by the U.S. military, how are they fighting?
They still have a lot of hardware and people. You don't like you can just have like very. They're still getting like stuff from Europe. The European, I think European shell production is still going to them, which is meaningful.
They're getting shells in usable numbers, but I don't think they're getting
currently
tanks in usable numbers or other vehicles or anything like that. From what I understand,
you can hold
like
lines
missiles,
with
rockets.
You can like you can it's you can play defense and expend a lot less equipment. The Russians have been doing it for a while in a lot of places on the front. I think we're going to see like just also they're going to be able to tighten their lines up. The Ukrainians will have to like probably fall back and to create more defensive area, more defensive places. You're going to see like territory lost, but I think it's going to be in a controlled manner. Just based on the size of the Ukrainian military, it is a huge military.
I think that's undoubtedly true for at least the next couple months. So I guess it depends maybe on the time frame. My thing is more because I hope you're right, and I imagine that in principle, some kind of negotiated settlement is inevitable. The thing is. I mean, unless Russia essentially just snatches a terrible strategic defeat from the jaws of this victory, which, you know, there's a certain Russians, especially Russian military types, are famously doomers. You know, Strelkov is the maybe apotheosis of the doomer Russian military general type figure, but this is a well-known archetype. And so it makes up a big chunk of the commentariat, pro-Russian online. So, yes, it's definitely been discussed that it's possible that Russia could, somehow throw away their gains. I don't actually think that's really – I don't think that's going to happen. I think that the opportunity for that was actually the deal that Boris Johnson blew up, that would have amounted not exactly to a Russian strategic defeat per se, but would have essentially kicked the can down the road in a way that was on balance harmful to Russia's position.
I do think that a negotiated settlement is still kicking the can, probably.
It depends on what the terms of the negotiation are, what the terms of the settlement.
We have this war again.
Unless Russia takes all the territory, basically all of Novorossiya, including probably Kharkov, Odessa, and Nikolaev,
into the Carpathian Mountains,
right? That which is probably that's going to be the end result anyway. The question is, does Russia have to conquer all that far, or are there going to be territorial concessions up to that far? Because otherwise, it's just there may be a pause for 10 or 20 years or however long. Probably a lot less than 20 years. Probably not even 10. But unless there's some like the new border is going to have to be essentially the Carpathian Mountains, exactly. And whether that happens as a result of territorial concessions or whether that happens as a result of, warfare is really the only question as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and I think it has become like almost like a sideshow in like the Western media doesn't give a shit anymore. No one's talking to Ukrainians, there's no more teary-eyed whatever.
I'm concerned as to
what's actually going to be in this big final like money bomb infusion. Because it's just money at this point, right? Like obviously
I don't know what the material
there's no shells in this package. Right. So what's in this fucking package?
Like planes or tanks either, from what I understand. So yeah, correct. What is it?
It might just be money to buy arms on the market, which probably isn't bad, I guess. Yeah,
but
that's all you can really imagine. Because HIMARS missiles, like things that the Israelis don't need, are probably going to be like they're probably never going to run out of missiles for HIMARS system.
Yeah, right. That's the thing is, I guess to sort of project it outward, the problem is I guess it depends on how much autonomy the Ukrainian government actually has and what the internal factional you know, Byzantine machinations are like and all that kind of stuff. But I don't see how the American government accepts defeat, essentially. I mean, I don't, because that's what it's one way or another. Like the problem with, again, everybody wants the war to end and there to be a negotiated settlement. And the problem is America going to sign off on those kind of territorial concessions? I hope so, but I just don't see it. Now, again, maybe that's where the Ukrainian government says we're tired. We've lost. There's now the latest figure I saw, which is supposedly compiled from obituaries, is 400,000 KIA, not including wounded and so on. This is purely from obituaries. Is 400? We're north of 400,000. That's just. It's time to stop, and it was never time to start. But what is the appetite for destruction on the Ukrainian side? I don't know. I can't answer. I'd have no insight into that.
Yeah, I mean, also, I don't know. Like, what the Ukrainian military is kind of a weird thing institutionally. Like,
yeah,
it the Ukrainian army never kind of wanted to, or higher command kind of never even wanted like the war in Donetsk. It was kind of a thing they were forced into anyway. Like, how much have they been actually purged to where, like, there's an ideological, like, Ukrainian ultranationalist thing going on versus, like, you know, the actual guys in control are just, like, old ex-Soviets who are, like, what the fuck? Like, they're still, like, confused, you know? Like, although, I think at this point, like, there's sunk costs to a large degree as well, which sucks. I am very interested to see what the numbers are for losses actually out of this when they finally do come out.
If we ever find like real numbers, because I don't necessarily take that for it sounds right, but I have no way of verifying it. And what the actual numbers are, if we ever learn, will definitely be very interesting. Especially if we can get kind of a time series, like you know what was the rate early on, what was the rate during the siege of Bakhmut, etc.
Yeah, I think we're gonna see a series of Bakhmuts, you know, till the end. There's always gonna be some fucking town.
maybe. I mean, I think at a certain point, depending on the material situation, like if they run out of drones, that could open up possibilities for maneuver. Also, they're really past. This is the, as I understand it, the last. They're basically approaching the Russian army is approaching the final line of serious fortifications that were prepared to any extent prior to the outbreak of the war. Where they're at is already significantly less built up than the areas that they seized in the first year. Once Slavyansk gets taken in the Bakhmut Mariupol fashion and Chasiv Yar and Konstantinovka in the south, I don't know what is in between there to really prevent.
I assure you there's been.
I'm sure there's something, American support is already, you know.
2 years of support is going through.
Yeah.
Like, concrete's cheap. There's plenty of labor. There's a lot of, you know, it's a huge army, which means there's lots of hands to do bullshit work. Like, dig in. Like.
Sure. And lots of territorial defense slaves to, conscript and.
Yeah, like I don't see like the great breakthrough ever, which is kind of true because you never really even saw like the great breakthroughs in World War II were always like achieved through massive surprise.
Yeah,
like the idea of the like they're gonna come here and we're gonna fight them and like if you know where they're coming, it's very hard to
break through. Break through.
Yeah.
Even D-Day, you know, to some extent was not, and then that wasn't arguably not really even a breakthrough. It was, I mean, they took him forever to.
Also, it was massive surprise too.
Yes. Yeah.
D-Day
was. I mean, the whole operation was behind schedule throughout. Like, there was no point at which they were making their timetable. So yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. So in terms of the Palestine thing, I guess the biggest news is that the Israelis have said they're dropping forces in Gaza down to 25,000 from 50,000. How much of Gaza that means they're taking? There's been all kinds of reports from the Arabs that they've fallen all the way out of Gaza City. I don't think that's true.
I don't think that's true, but yeah, they're clear. Well, the thing is, they were talking a huge game of like, we're going to occupy the whole thing. And they're essentially, I haven't really seen it talked about, but they're essentially, I wouldn't quite say, you know, going home with their tail between their legs, but there are certainly some of them who are. And those who are remaining, it's unclear. This is going to continue to be a brutal slog for the IDF for the foreseeable future. And I don't know. I'm not convinced that they have the capability to actually conclude victory according to any of their stated objectives.
Yeah. I am wondering if they are literally just going to like the mass starvation thing. Like, actually, we're just doing starvation. Yeah. Like, and at what point does that get to become like? I mean, obviously, genocide. International human rights law is a joke, right? The IGJ.
People have phones. Like, people see, you know, kids starving and like, dying in the street. Like, it's not going to, like, at a certain point, Egypt and Lebanon and, you know,
and also they're not like. So this is like a Holocaust that is actually happening if they're going to try to do it, which means, unlike in like movies and books written by shuttle fucking retards, they're going to fight. Like, so what holds back white nationalists and what holds back Hamas is that everyone in Gaza is not a member of Hamas. It's true. It's sad, but everyone in Gaza is not a fighter for Hamas. They will be if this is the plan.
right.
And also, like, if the plan, if the size of Hamas is 300,000 guys and women, probably at that point, that's going to be a hell of a thing. Like, they will be able to push out. Like, we're making jokes that in Jew propaganda, you've noticed the Jews being browner and browner. Have you noticed this trend?
Oh, yes.
And and even the Palestinians being made whiter and whiter. Yes. Like there's two old ladies.
Nina baddies up and down the, yes.
Well, they have the picture of two Christian old ladies that they fucking killed, that they were accused of being Christian women in, like, by that monastery, or was it a monastery or the nunnery that had been killed, who were like grandmothers. It was very horrifying, but they were also very white. Like, I would have believed they were any nursing home in America, you know? They were just two old ladies. Mm-hmm. And they were just white. Like, I just couldn't tell. They had brown eyes, I guess, which is okay.
Yeah.
I joked that by the end of this war, you're going to see, like, the SS Viking Division emerge from the tunnels as they're all increasingly blonder and paler.
That would be cool.
And storm
that would be cool, yeah.
It's like, if you know, against these fucking, as the Jews get, like, darker and niggerier and darker and, like, it is interesting. Also, I had a talk with a friend about, like, just the Jew in general and how they operate and their religion, because we're talking about the whole, like, Hasidic thing being like ultra orthodox thing is like, it's like 200 years old. Like, they made that shit up very recently. Like, America is older than like the Hasidic movement. It's not some ancient thing. It's about what was Judaism before that? And Judaism before that is always kind of just like riffing off the society around it. It's like always like, oh, you know, like we, it's like we're, you know, actually, it's like they find an angle in a society. It's like, oh, well, you know, we're the older Christians, and we have our own kind of funny church, and we have our own, we do it on Saturday, not Sunday. You know, it's like always like these kind of weird, funny stuff they do. But there isn't really a Jewish like culture or society. It's always just like in relation to its host thing. And not to denigrate the Arabs, who are doing an excellent job throughout this whole affair, but the Jews in Israel are kind of reverting to becoming a Middle Eastern country in a lot of ways. Like, you just the way they talk and the way they act, you know, like they're not acting like you would imagine, like, okay, we take 6 million Europeans and put them here, or 4 million Europeans and put them here. They're acting much more similar to an Arab state than a Western state. And that's because obviously they're Semitic people. But I think they're like regression to the Hebe is hitting here because of like Jewish success. But it's hitting them in Israel like you wouldn't believe. They're regressing to Muhammad or whatever you want to call it. Like they're you know? Like they're not doing a good job militarily. I think it's very clear they're going in with overwhelming force. They're blowing the fuck out of everything, and then they're still getting like hit enough that they can't achieve like objectives, and they also don't know what their objectives are. Like, I was trying to think of what is a infantry like officer like. Is it say you're a platoon commander in part of Gaza City right now? What's the mission you're given? Like, actually, so the mission is to destroy and degrade Hamas or whatever. What does that actually look like to a ground force junior officer? Because if they're holding in place and just like taking a certain city block and securing it, they're getting sniped and tagged from far away and got people materializing inside their block from a tunnel and just killing them and leaving. So like your base objective is just stupid and slowing you down. Or it's changing every day. Like this day, you're patrol and secure this area, and do this. To the point, they're just walking around and getting shot. Like, which is a criticism of the Americans in, in Iraq. But when the Americans would walk around and get shot, they had like it contributed to like an overarching thing where like, okay, we are building up the Iraqi police and military to eventually take this job from us. There is no like Palestinian equivalent. Like the PLO is kind of that in the West Bank, but they're not. The Jews aren't standing up some kind of like PLO force to replace Hamas. I'd be worried if they were. Like if there was like a, I don't know, some kind of like PLA, some kind of PLA police force moving in Gaza alongside the Jews, I might get worried. But they're not. They're just running around and getting shot. Like, there's no... It's not a counterinsurgency. It's just a race war. But they're not, like... But also, they can't just murder every civilian. They just can't. So, yeah. So they're stuck between... Like, do you want to just be patrolling Gaza forever? Because they're going to lose. You've tried that over and over again. Like, they cannot just occupy Gaza. They need to ethnically cleanse it. The Gazans are refusing to be ethnically cleansed. Like, they're at an impasse. Like, ethnic cleansing requires assent because people getting ethnically cleansed aren't, like, Jews who just, like, march into the ovens. They're going to fight you. And they're going to fight you at, like, very close, you know, close up where your machines matter less and less and less. Yeah, that's...
Yeah, and so the long-term structural trends just favor... Or I guess, you know, Zog is fucked. Like, I don't see, like, where is the, you know, but for both the United States and Israel, where are the structural factors going to come in that are going to offset these dynamics? I don't see.
And if the Jews do just starve them to death in front of the whole world.
Yeah. I mean, then they deserve what happens next. I mean, they already.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Like what's
it's not going to happen. I don't like that. I have to imagine that long before that's actually that, you know, that they're that essentially a kinetic regional war breaks out, which we're already on the path to. One of the headlines. Actually, I was surprised to see the New York Times basically saying front page news after this airstrikes on Yemen that it's already a regional war. The question is how much it expands was essentially the headline. I was like, wow, okay, well, that's a hell of an admission. I mean, I agree, but damn, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's the Yemeni thing. They're calling a lot of bluffs. They're also, they're just, hey, like, they're not beatable either. Like much more so even than the Gazans. Like if you kill all the Gazans, the Houthis might just say, actually, there's no more boats allowed here forever.
Right.
Like,
yeah,
you know, like,
what are they going to do? What can anyone do to stop it? Nothing. I mean, there's no, if you know, I guess you could do the same thing. You could give the Houthis the Palestinian treatment, but then it's just, you know, it just,
they already did that. The Houthis already got, the Houthis got,
right.
Like 4,000 Houthis died because of starvation. Like they got, like what happened to, like, did you see the Houthi announcement that like, we were so happy they were bombing us because like they hadn't been bombing us for years, and we felt
bad because the Palestinians were getting bombed and we weren't. We're like, hey, Jews, where's our bombs?
Yeah, that's a legitimate thing, you know.
Lots of developments. I guess we could drill down even more.
I have one more brief announcement. If you want to, I was thinking how to kind of expand show content. We're going to have a email address you can email in show comments, like to us, that we will read if we think they're good. That will,
that's a great, I will
create
idea.
That and it will debut next show. So prepare your nigger comments. And I guess if you want to leave a comment on a show we did, I guess, you know, that's older. That works too. Just put an episode, which episode you're referring to. So yeah, you know, write your essays now. And we'll next episode, I'll have an email address. Y'all can get it. We can kind of run down the comments if they're good.
Yes, that's a great idea. Okay, cool. Well, yes, it's great to be. We will also be back. You know, I don't know about every week necessarily, but certainly in a more regular recording schedule than we have been for the past several months.
Yeah.
So, and sorry.
No, go ahead. I think we're targeting Sunday, but we're also targeting Dead Spaces, you know, like if there's a space in the count.
I don't know. We'll see. I was also thinking Saturday, so that gives people, you know, more opportunity to hear it on Sunday.
Yeah.
We'll see.
We'll see.
But it just depends. It just depends. But yeah. Anyway. Hope you all enjoyed, and take care, everybody.
Girl.